Let me just tell you, I'm so excited about what I'm doing that I forgot to turn on the clip on my microphone. Actually, I thought it was on, but somehow it wasn't on. I thought I actually did it. I did a test of it, and it's working again. Don't know how that happened. I actually, you know, I've got a little testing I do. But anyway, maybe this will get edited a little bit, and you won't have to hear the blaring of the music over and over again as they cover for not being able to hear me. Jess, whoever's on the other end, thank you for staying in touch. And as always, I'm so glad to be here with my wonderful audience. You know, you folks, and I meet you as I travel, are among the best people in the world. I mean, to listen to this show, to listen to the great people I bring on to the show, and today's going to be no exception to greatness. Kim, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
Okay. Hi, Kim. Well, I'm going to introduce you in a minute or two. Did you hear all that chaos getting started? For some reason,
no.
I wasn't coming across. But listen, folks.
I'm good.
I'm so glad to have you all listening to this good show. I want to tell you about some new things that are going on with me before I get to talking with Kim Witzak, who has been on twice before. First of all, about being on twice before, I want to remind you that if you look up my radio page on Bregan.com, you have a resource you don't have on any of the websites that carry the show, like Podbean or PRNFM. You will have a list. You'll find, go to a couple of links and you'll see the link that says, here's a complete list of people who have been on the show. And you can go and look down at an alphabetical list. You can also search it, but it's a list of a few hundred people. You can easily look it over and see when the several times Bob Whitaker's been on, or Joanna Moncrief, or the several times Kim has been on, or the several times that Peter Goetze has been on. I mean, just lots of wonderful people. My friend Pam Popper, the nutritionist, the time she's been on. And you can just click it and listen to it. You can also find the times when I've done solos on one subject or another. So don't forget that special resource we have for you enjoying this. And I'm really aiming at just making me and my website much more available online. The new website is getting hundreds and hundreds and, you know, just I think 2,000 the other day of single people, individual people going to the site. And so I've now put up something brand new on the site. It's brand new, and it's given, you can see it pretty clearly. It comes down around third or fourth feature item, and it's called Frequent Alerts by Peter Bregan. So just to keep you all alert to not just what I'm doing, but to the interesting things that are going on, I have now got a frequent alerts that I can write myself. I don't have to go to my techie or my wife or anybody else and say, hey, I want to put up a blog. I can just write you anything I want. And I'm going to be writing frequently on my frequent alerts by Dr. Peter Bregan. And the first alert is up. It links you to a very interesting blog on Madden America, and it connects that was done on kids with Michael Corrigan and on ADHD and whether kids with ADHD have small heads. I mean, just one more vicious attack on children. And it comes out of Lancet, and Michael Corrigan and Bob Whitaker, frequent guests, make an answer to it. And, of course, I had Michael Corrigan on May 17th, just two shows ago. So I'm also going to give you advance notice of many of the shows that I'm doing. And I'm just trying to keep you – I'll try to keep you in touch with what in the world's happening in our universe, our huge universe. And that universe is much expanded now because I'm working so – and this is there's more about this on my first frequent alert that was put up yesterday. I'm working really closely with Pam Popper, who is a nutritionist. She's not gimmicky. She's not going to sell you something to improve your serotonin or your dopamine or something stupid like that. She is, and dangerous, she is working on vegetable-based diets based on evolutionary theory and research, based on animal research, based on human research, comparative studies, anthropological studies. And she's not against meat. It's not like you can't eat any meat ever or anything like that. But it's about basically going on a vegetable diet, and I'm basically on a plant diet. And I've been on it now, folks, and I have maintained my rather quick loss of 15 pounds, and I'm feeling better. And I think this is a very important thing. Of course, hundreds of millions of you literally around the world are way ahead of me on this. I'm coming late to this. But Pam and I are working on setting up clinics and training programs that bring together the two concepts of drug-free mental health and a plant-based diet that avoids dairy and fat and overdoing it on meat. So she's very sensible. And Pam will be on my show, actually, next week. So you can hear Pam next week. And I'll have to put up an alert about that. So things are going very well for me. I've got a new blog up on Mad in America today, which is about how the FDA has gotten across to the public this lie that in its studies only children became suicidal on SSRIs, that their adult studies showed that adults aren't going to be getting more suicidal infects in the old ages. They might get even better. It's a pack of nonsense because the children's studies were done with FDA supervision. And the adult studies, and I didn't realize this, even I didn't realize this until I put it up, until last week, and I found it. I immediately put it up on my first feature, my first frequent alert. The FDA studies on adults were not done with FDA supervision. They weren't done with FDA rules and regulations. They were given to be done in any way they wanted, basically, by the drug companies. So you're comparing the FDA monitored, controlled, assessed, valid. They use the word. The children's studies were validated by the FDA. They showed the suicide in kids, and then they give studies back to the drug company and say, hey, this is too many people for us. You just give us a study. Well, for God's sakes, the drug companies have already told you over and over again there's no suicide in anybody. So, of course, they found no suicide in adults. Now, this is fraud. The labels don't say this. The full prescribing information doesn't say this. What does it say? It says what every doctor now believes. FDA studies found that only children are susceptible to increased suicide on antidepressants. What a pack of lies. The FDA didn't even study adults. They gave it back to the evildoers who'd been hiding suicide all along and continue to hide suicidality and violence on their drugs. So that's a new blog I have up on Mad in America, and you can reach it through my frequent alerts. And when you go to frequent alerts, there's a place where you can sign up. See, I'm getting so modern and technological. That's what I'm doing for my 81st birthday, folks, which was May 11th. I'm getting more technological, some with the help of my wife and some with the help of Ian, my marvelous techie, who's my assistant. Like good tech assistants, he's hundreds of miles away. It's just I've known him for the dozens of years, a couple of dozen years, I guess. So I'm just getting more and more out there. So you can now sign up at my frequent alerts and get an email alert when there's a frequent alert goes up, and they're going to be going up pretty frequently. So, folks, you can tell I'm feeling pretty good about a lot of things I'm doing, and you're gonna have your socks knocked off tomorrow, next week on May 31st, when Pam Popper and I talk about the plans we have for new training programs, new conferences, new educational programs. So glad to have you aboard all of my projects. Now, my guest, you're there, Kim. I'm so glad you're
here. I am. Yes, thank you.
Kim Witzhack. Her name is spelled, that was a long intro. Her name was spelled, is spelled W-I-T-C-Z-A-K. Kim lost her husband to antidepressant suicide. So there, that ties in right in with the FDA faking studies by just giving them back to the drug companies and saying, please look again. Please, please look again and tell us the truth. When we know we have to monitor the heck out of you to get anything. So her husband was lost to this kind of fraud. And she's just become a super advocate for speaking truth to the pharmaceutical empire. My new phrase, the pharmaceutical empire. One of the things about Kim is she's actually, we'll see if they threw her off yet, but she's been consumer representative on the FDA's advisory committee. And last time she told us about how Shantex, which is the per prescription called more than any other drug, any other American drug, Shantex is a smoking drug, is more deadly with violence than any other medication, and has been big black warning, and she's going to tell us more about the FDA and its caving in to the drug companies around this issue and what the latest is. But Kim, before that, I was just fascinated reading more about you. Would you just start out and say more about who you are and all the things you do when you're not being a pharmaceutical empire critic? So I'm breathless. I give it over to you, Kim.
Oh, that's nice. Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. I always enjoy being a guest on your show, and I've been an admirer of yours and a follower of your work since the time that we had the, or I guess I got into this work, as I like to call it. But, Woody died a long time ago. It was back in 2003. He was given, antidepressant Zoloft for insomnia by his GP with no history of depression. And it was sample pack, said it would help take off the edge and help him sleep. I was out of the country for the first 3 weeks. I come home. He's telling me he's outside his body looking in. We try to calm him down, calls his GP, a guy that he's trusted, and said, he said, well, you got to give it 4 to 6 weeks to kick in. We find him hanging. Instantly and intuitively from the beginning, something didn't make sense, right? And literally at that point, the coroner said, oh, it might be something to do with his antidepressant, so they took it. Literally, when my life fell apart, my brother-in-law Googled Zoloft and suicide, had no idea what we were about to discover, and then also what had now led to my, I like to call it my advocacy career, but it's really about holding these companies accountable, but also it's about educating the public. I think we were a perfect example of what really happens in the real world. There's a lot of trust. We trust our doctors. We trust that the drug they're giving us was approved for that purpose, and then to find out it's not. So, you've got the issue of off-label. So we had that issue. Then you look at, the doctors. They all trust that the FDA has done the research. And I think when you start looking at this, we've got this whole system that's been built on trust on the one hand. And on the other hand, you have the industry, which I like to call them their marketers. I believe healthcare is a marketer, or is marketing. It's a business. And I think, ironically, you're asking what else I do. My career, what I've spent my entire 25-year career has been in advertising. So I understand and how companies think, how, they like to, whether it's a Coke, a Coke or Pepsi or a car company, they're all the same. They're hiring marketing people, as are the drug and device companies. They're hiring some of the best and the top MBA students to come in and run their program. So anyways, I feel like my life is kind of all intertwined now. And even, my experience of sitting on the FDA panel, I think there's so many things, and Peter, you nailed it right on the head when you, you know, you said that to find out that the FDA really didn't do the study. They're just looking at what the industry said. And to be honest with you, I've had my own experiences of attending these FDA advisory committees as a member of the public, especially back when we were trying to get black box warnings put on the antidepressants. But then also now, fast forwarding all these years later, being a consumer representative, basically supposed to represent the voice of the public on these advisory committees, and seeing who's on these kind of committees, what it's very political. It's also really about, it's a business and following, you know, you start looking at how it all connects and connecting the dots. And it's pretty shocking. And it's pretty shocking because I also believe that as physicians, they aren't even aware of how the FDA works. And so there's so much blind trust in our system. I mean, so much blind trust in our system. And so, you know, you look at this in the last, since you and I last spoke, Peter, there's been a couple things that I wanted to talk to you about and then also get your kind of take on it. There was supposed to be an FDA advisory committee meeting on a new drug to offset tardive dyskinesia.
Tardive dyskinesia, yeah.
Yeah, and I know you do a lot of work on it, but all of a sudden it was going to be going through that fast-tracking program, which I think I've talked to you about before, which is only needing one clinical trial to get it approved because there's no drug. And it's very similar in the pathway to get it approved, like the Parkinson's psychosis drug. And all of a sudden it was on our calendar, and then it went away, and then I saw that the FDA approved it. So that was one thing. And then probably the one, the other that I've been most involved in is I spent the 6 weeks at my friend who became a friend, her husband's suicide trial on Paxil, or generic Paxil down in Chicago. So that was fascinating because, you know, it was one of the first, suicide trials that actually went to, for an adult, that went to trial. So a lot of these documents and the way the FDA works and what the companies knew came out. So anyways, it's been a fascinating last couple months.
Yeah, the this drug that they've approved, valbenazine, is it's very closely related to tetrabenazine, which for a long time was only available in Canada, and people used to get it from there. And if it's anything like that drug, which it is, it's going to be mostly a disaster. That drug has often come up in my medical legal work because people with TD, severe TV, are the kinds of people I see in my medical legal work, and they've been put on that drug and they've become that kind of a drug, tetrabenazine in particular, and they become much more disturbed, much more psychotic. They've gotten different kinds of abnormal movements. To rush through such a dangerous drug, it's got to be responding to some sort of greasing of the hands or something that's made this happen quickly, because it's an extremely dangerous drug. It messes with the same dopaminergic system that is strongly involved in causing tardive dyskinesia, and it's going to be a real risky drug. Anyway, well, then, let you go on again.
Well, I was, in my mind, when I hear those, just like the Parkinson's psychosis drug that had come on the market with only one clinical study, and there wasn't even a certain number, there was like 199 people. So I think when you start really looking into, trials and what's working, I think, starting at this idea that the objective, I mean, if you think about it, when these trials are actually created by the companies to get the drug on the market, the the objective is to get the drug approved, right? And so, you know, you start looking at how you create that trial, how many people do you need in it, who's overseeing it. There's just a lot of questions of just starting of asking about the question, you know, about the studies. Then, you know, you look at something, are there two? And, you know, I always, or so we've all learned that, you know, a gold standard, or the FDA has a gold standard of having, you know, two trials. Well, when you only have one, how do you really test it against something? And then is it just a drug that we're treating another drug side effect? You know, we know all these psych drugs are causing these different movement disorders and akathisia and whatnot. So are we starting to just create drugs and we're going to be and I guess the other one I would say for consumers and patients is, you know, they don't, that we are, the we, the public, are the real clinical trial, because they're in there and they're not studying how these drugs are actually being used in the real world situation. That, you know, it's a drug against placebo. So when you have combinations of drugs that people are on, like, where are those are like the trials that people should really be caring about. Like, what's happening in the real world? But yet, you know, when the real world comes into it, and there are things that you have a reaction, or if you have, like, there's the violence, or there's another homicide, another school shooting, or another high-profile suicide, you know, you start, and what's the narrative that comes back is, oh, they were depressed. They have mental illness, you know, and it's really about, like, unwinding and stepping back and taking... I always like to think of this, like, you know, when you're, you take a golf ball and you peel the outside and you start peeling away and you're like, to get to the core of what's inside the golf ball, which is, you know, just like a big, bouncing ball. It's like all of that layers of stuff. And I think that's what we need to really start doing with the drugs that we're putting in our bodies, and especially in the mental health. But I have to say, when I was saying earlier about it's a business, I happen to have a really good friend of mine from high school, and back in the day, either, you know, I went into advertising and she went into pharmaceutical sales, and she's worked for Pfizer. She was selling Zoloft, she was selling Viagra, and over the years, she, you know, ended up getting out of it, but just started to think about going back into this sales again. And so she calls me up and saying, what do you know about Xarelto, because there's all these lawsuits. And, you know, and Xarelto is it's like a Coumadin for managing blood thinners, right? So I know, and I always tell people this too, if you really want to start looking at things, see if there's any lawsuits out there, because lawsuits are usually based on something that, you know, bad happened. So anyway, she was asking me what I knew about the lawsuits, and I asked her why. And she goes, well, I'm interviewing for the company, and told me her entire job, her objective as a salesperson, was to convert all the long-term facilities in Texas from Coumadin to Xarelto. And if you know anything, I mean, again, this is in the blood thinner land, but one is a really inexpensive, but it was, and the Xarelto is extremely expensive. There's all, you know, there's definitely all kinds of dangers that have been discovered when they're putting, you know, millions of people on these drugs. But the whole idea was to convert. So it really came down to, it's sales. And then knowing that, you know, you start, when I was saying earlier, connecting the dots, well, who's paying for all of the senior long-term, you know, facilities? It's Medicare, right? And so you look at Medicare, when you look at Medicare, then you look at Medicaid, and you're looking at all of our foster kids, like, where are all the incentives and who's paying for them and the high pricing? You know, you get into all this stuff, and yet at the end of the day, we, and that's why I say the public needs to start, you know, paying attention and asking and the hard questions and forcing conversations with our physicians, because I want my physician to be doing the work too. You know, I want them to start not thinking that, oh, you know, with antidepressants, oh, they're safe. It's because they've been told that it's only, you know, that risk is only for kids, but really in adults, oh, they're safe. And especially as you get older, you know, somebody in the age group of my friend Wendy Dolan, her husband Stuart, he was 57. Oh, well, you know, the narrative is they actually start having a benefit, even a greater benefit for people that are in the aging. And so, you know, all of this, we have just bought into something without it's like we're missing the critical thinking piece and the common sense. And I love what you were saying, that you're starting to work in this nutrition. And, you know, you look at back, you know, 20, 30 years ago, did we have this problem? What's different? You know, and so anyways, these are all the things that keep me up at night. And I don't have that insomnia. But, you know, you look at even last week with the high-profile Chris Cornell suicide, the grunge artist, and his wife. You know, the one thing I actually appreciate was his wife instantly was like, said Ativan. And so, you know, maybe people are waking up, but at the same time, I don't think so. I was reading through, you know, I always love to read comments, you know, like with a media article is out there, and good, bad in our, you know, supporting our, you know, points of view. But really, it's interesting going in and reading readers' comments, because I think readers' comments are kind of the pulse of what people are thinking, or just what is kind of the narrative out there. And I went in one, and all these people really came down on it's all about depression and suicide, and suicide in the depression piece, and that the drugs are actually helpful. And you know, I think it's going to take time. I mean, I think we're slowly trying to chip at it, but it's a really hard thing to do. And I think that, you know, looking back, and I know you've been involved in this for a long time, when, you know, looking back at your antidepressant fact book, being the one in the 90s, looking at some of those, you know, the FDA hearings on Prozac, and they did, you know, they told at that point, you know, they were looking at companies or asking them to look at suicidal ideation and whatnot. But when you look at what came out of some of the documents that came out in the Dolan case in Chicago, GSK, they used a GlaxoSmithKline used a coating, or whoever was the maker back then, they used a coating of emotional lability. Like, what does that even mean?
You know, suicide, and yet, is yeah. That,
yeah, I mean, that's
I've
what
got
it
this
means.
On my website, folks. I did a 3-article analysis of my work as an expert in product liability. I had a product liability case against Paxil, that is against GSK, GlaxoSmithKline. And what I found, and I may have been the first one to find this out, was that they were doing things like when they got a report from one of their own paid investigators of a suicide associated with taking the drug that may have been caused by the drug, a specific thing, they'd change it to that the drug caused emotional lability, which is just emotions going up and down. It's not even bipolar. It's like the weakest thing you could find. So they went from classifying it in their computer the way it came in from the controlled clinical trial, the way it came in as a suicide associated with Paxil, they changed it to nothing that you'd ever find, emotional ability. And remember what I was saying. These are the same companies that that the FDA said, well, we'll rely on your data, and you're using the data in whatever way you want because there's too much for us to do. We're not going to monitor you like we did on the children. Now, please come up with some honest data this time. Are you kidding? They'd have trouble finding the data themselves. They'd so disguised it if the next generation in the building didn't know about the old fakery, they wouldn't even themselves be able to find it. I had to spend days inside of GlaxoSmithKline digging in and knowing where to look at what were then cartons and cartons and cartons of materials, enough to fill a house. Golly, let me ask you, Cam. I was shocked that I didn't realize that the adult studies on suicide from the FDA were not from the FDA at all. They were just covering up for the drug company and acting as if the studies on adult suicide had some validity when they didn't have any at all. They were just drug company churnings. Did you realize that? I didn't realize it. I'm not sure folks have realized this. So that's why I wrote the blog.
Yeah, I had no idea. I assumed that the FDA had actually dug into it, did the studies, looked at it, and you know, it's really, you know, looking at the time when those drugs first came out, right? It was during, what was happening in society or what was happening at the FDA? It was all the AIDS crisis, right? And the FDA was almost like approving things. And then once they started that, looking at going back, and I know you've talked about it and wrote about it, but looking at some of those advisory committees, and they were all being paid or they had connections to the industry and they still approved it.
They still do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. And so, I mean, to not realize that the FDA, and then, you know, I think that is the one thing that people, I mean, especially the antidepressants. I mean, of course, and when you turn a blind eye or you don't even know what you're looking for, and you're just going to trust, like, hey, here are the summaries, and you don't go in and go into the patient, you know, level data, which is obviously some of the things that you did, but emotional ability, like, to ask the question, what does that mean? Like, to find out that that actually is suicide attempt, that's a very different thing. Suicide or suicide attempt in a label, that's very different than emotional ability. Yeah. And, you know, to a doctor, you know, you quickly put that in there. I look at back some of the things in my own lawsuit I had against Pfizer and some of the documents that came out. There were, and it was, you know, mostly it was in the, it was some of the, you know, communications back and forth or about the FDA. And literally Pfizer said to one of their employees, it was, you know, an email exchange between a couple of employees, should we give the FDA, because they were asking for some data on suicide, should we give them the simple, straightforward version, I think it was 1C, or the report 1, or do we give them the complicated report? Well, guess what they gave to them? The complicated one, where you're not going to be able to, you know, you have to go in and actually do some work in there. No, my thing is, if the FDA is asking you for this, why aren't you giving us the straight answer?
Yeah, well they can't, because their drugs don't work. We're learning that more and more.
Right.
They don't work. By the way, folks, it wasn't just GlaxoSmithKline miscoding, purposely, fallaciously miscoding suicide attempts. What I found going into Eli Lilly on Prozac, when I got inside of them, the way I did get inside of the same way I got inside GSK as a product liability expert, I found they were hiding things like suicide attempt or suicide under, just hang on to your hat, under no drug effect. No drug effect. What sort of twisted imagination would do something so evil? And if you go and you look at my blog that's up today on Mad in America, I actually give you links to two very hard to read memos on my website from inside of packs of Prozac, where a fellow is actually writing to the chiefs of Eli Lilly, saying he's from Germany, but he's writing to not only the Germans but to the top people in the U.S. and he's saying, how can I do this? How can I take the information I'm getting from our own investigators that there's a link between Prozac and suicide in a case and give it a different name entirely that doesn't indicate that it even did any harm? He said, how am I going to tell my family? How am I going to tell a judge? What am I going to say? And then he ends with, of course, we'll do what you say. So you can actually read the memos. They're hard to read, but and I need to find a way to clean them up and all, but they're hard to read. And but you can see them. They're in print. The shenanigans are just terrible. So Kim, and we're talking with Kim Wetzak, who lost her husband to these damn drugs. And Kim has gone on to be an inside ear into the FDA and a really devoted and brilliant critic. two questions to follow up on. One, what has happened with the Shantix? And I have some idea about it, but I want to follow up on our last show. And two, what has happened to you? And now that you've been just more and more, for more years now, being critical of the FDA, are you still sitting on their advisory committee? So two questions.
Sure. Number one, well, since the last time you were on the show and I explained my experience of not being able to participate as a consumer rep, I was told a couple days before the advisory committee that I had an intellectual conflict of interest. So basically, I had a strong point of view that disagreed with who the sponsor was, right? So basically, I was not able to participate, but I did still show up. The FDA's advisory committee voted to remove the black box warning, and subsequently, this is Chantix. They took the black box warning removed off. They removed the black box warning. And so right now, the black box warning has been removed. I have been told by physicians, in fact, it was the physician that was in Wendy Dolan's case, was telling, you know, we just were talking about pharmaceutical sales and what's happening. And I said, well, you know, I was telling him about the my experience about Chantix and being on the advisory committee. And he said, you're not going to believe, but the Pfizer was just in my office last week, and he was pissed. He goes, they were just in my office last week saying that the FDA found that there was no issue with the violence, and they took the black box warning off. And he was angry. And I'm like, this is exactly, I knew this is what was going to happen, that they were going to spin it as the FDA didn't find any risk. And they took, now with all these other studies, observational studies, it proves that there is no risk involved in Chantix. So they're already out
and
there
he was
telling
angry
the doctors.
Because of the FDA had given him such a black eye, is that what it was?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was mad at the pharmaceutical company who was just in there. Well, and you know, you could really go back to blame the FDA, right? Because it was an unprecedented move to remove.
No, who was the I lost you. Who was the angry person? It was the doc or it was the representative?
Yeah, it was
I got
the
confused.
Doctor.
From the
nope,
it was
the
doctor.
Doctor.
Of course, he was.
Yeah,
angry.
It was
yeah.
The doctor because he was also involved in, you know, he was the doctor that was on trial for in Wendy Dolan's case. With Paxil, he was the one who prescribed the Paxil. So it was more of this idea of, as a physician, how he's being manipulated, right? So he was just mad that, you know, the Pfizer just came in and literally the week before told him that the drugs were safe and that the FDA didn't remove the warning, which is, of course, you know, I mean, it's a business. That's what they're going to do. But you really look at that idea of the FDA. Isn't the FDA supposed to be protecting us? Right? I mean, we know where it is. We're looking at, you know, Trump just came out last week with, or earlier this week, the budget cutting of all, you know, the agencies and more in his trying to balance the budget, but then also said he would like to put more onus on the drug companies to pay higher application fees. Well, we already have the fox in the hen house, right? So I'm guarding the hen house. So it's just going to get worse. But, you know, you really look at that Chantix and
well, I'm not sure that it'll be worse with them paying higher fees. I mean, right now, the drug companies are basically financing the FDA.
Right.
And that there was this legislation, folks, that allowed the drug companies to pay money to heat up to advance the rapidity of the approval process. You know, I think, you know, it used to take 10 years to get a drug approved. That made people think there were 10 years of studies, but the studies like for Prozac were only 4, 5, and sometimes 6 weeks long. It was the bureaucracy that was taking 10 years. I mean, it's really quite bizarre. But that huge amount of money that poured in when Congress said you can now start helping us fund the process. Since then, the rates of approval are almost approaching 100%. I mean, they're way, way up. And I imagine that is not me, but other people who've been more on the inside have been saying, well, that's because now it's a funded organization. So I'm not sure that paying of higher fees is going to make things worse, because at least it would just be a higher general fee, maybe to
right.
I don't know.
Good point. Yeah, you know what? I think you're absolutely right. We already know who's basically running or who's got the power inside the FDA. I mean,
it's a sham. It's a shame.
Yeah, and that
now,
was the
are you
other
still,
thing. You know,
are you still there? I mean, that was one committee they wouldn't let you go on, but are you still going to FDA advisory committees as a representative of the consumer?
I'm still on the FDA advisory committee. I've also been, they call it loaning out, so I've been on a couple other ones that were to do with the contact lens solution. And it's really interesting to me, just some of the common sense things to me that make sense. And where, I mean, there's, you know, of course I could see areas where everybody could, where we could improve, in everything that we do. I mean, even like you're talking about food next week, isn't it the Food and Drug Administration and realizing what's going on in the food? And I mean, it's definitely something. And I have to say, it's a very lone. I am still on it as consumer rep. I also find it a very sometimes lonely and isolated place, as you know, being sometimes a voice of a different voice or a critical voice. A critical voice doesn't mean you're negative, but it's really hard sometimes when I always get painted as I'm negative, and I'm such not the negative person. I just am, you know, I just want to do, you know, these are lives that are being played at. I mean, I want to do speaking with my industry in advertising. These are not, you know, this is not about advertising if you are trying to get people to buy one car or another car. I mean, these are lives that are at play. And you know, you think about like when, what do most lawsuits want to do? They all want to go into the marketing, because it's really, where's the marketing documents kind of showing? And these are lives. So anyways, I will continue as long as I'm on there. I remember when the FDA came to me those couple days before the Chantix hearing and said I was had intellectual bias. I told them at that point, I will always, if safety is considered an intellectual bias, then I will always have an intellectual bias. But, you know, the opposite of that.
But, you know, the interesting thing is, and folks don't know this, that talking about intellectual bias, since most of the people on these committees are actually getting paid by drug companies in one way or another, as consultants, as investigators, as speakers, as promoters, the FDA has to give them letters of forgiveness that doesn't allow them to be sued for their conflict of interest in participating. Now, they didn't go to Kim and say, well, since we think you have a bias where you're critical of Chantix, we will give you a letter forgiving you so that you can participate without getting sued. That's what they should have done. Because that's what they do for all these mostly guys who literally work for the drug companies and sit on that committee. The first time I saw this, it was back in the 1990s when I was doing this really intense product liability work. And I discover that the makeup of these committees, and then I come upon all these letters that the FDA makes out for them saying that you are forgiven, nobody can sue you, basically, for your conflict of interest in being on the committee. They didn't do that for you, did they?
No, not at all. I mean, I was instantly off. And then, you know, you start looking at that going, wait, if I have an intellectual conflict, like, and so, you know, most of those guys are all being forgiven for financial, right? And they have something to financially gain. I actually gain not a thing from being on these committees. And sometimes I wonder, why do I do it? But I do it also just because I think it's really important to understand how it works, because it's a pretty political and political process.
Kim, I'm going to interrupt. You do it because you're a great human being, because you have courage, because you've spoken out, because you're unafraid of standing alone, and because you can stand the suffering of isolation, and because you know it's right. So I know why you're doing it. What I can't figure out is why they're letting you.
I know. Well, what? There is some truth on that. But it is, first of all, thank you, because that is why it's what drives me, because I've seen it. And I just don't know how you can live with, you know, you live with yourself. But going back to the intellectual conflicts, so you think about that as a physician. So let's say I come from the perspective of safety, and let's look at this, and, you know, but isn't the physicians that are on there, don't they also have one that they automatically believe maybe a drug is, you know, the first line of treatment? Isn't that, in a way, isn't that a an intellectual kind of bias in that you believe that drugs
is.
Are first?
That's right. Brilliant. That's brilliant. I'd never heard anybody say that before, and I didn't think about that. Of course it is. They're coming in just like that, with a bias.
Right. And I come from, you know, the safety side of things, and it's really, you know, you just start looking at this whole world of the pills for every ill and selling it. And I love, again, I can't wait to listen to your show next week on the food, because you know, so many times you start talking to people and about their experiences, especially in a lot of the psych meds or the sleeping and the anxiety, which are human conditions, right? And they have to be managed differently. We got to start managing things differently than a pill. That doesn't take away. We're not learning life skills or, you know, looking at our foods or looking at different ways of being. But, you know, when you're always doing the pills, they'll, you know, if you go talk to, the public, they'll say, oh, you know, they're going to step me up. They're going to start small and step me, you know, they'll keep stepping up. And I go, shouldn't we be working the other way? Like, if you are going to have to go on a med, shouldn't our goal to be getting people off? But that's not how it's about staying on and keeping, and, you know, it's, let's step up the meds or the percentage, as opposed to taking people off.
No, they, you know, when they approved Xanax for panic disorder, they discovered in the process that a large percentage of patients on for a mere six to eight weeks, couldn't get off it. And if you read the very, very fine print, you'll see they admit it, and that's them admitting it. So God knows what the truth is. I think something like a third to a half, it's good, it's rough. You can check it by going and looking up the full prescribing information for Xanax for panic disorder. But how can you approve a drug that's a neurotoxin, you know, it's hurting the brain, that a big chunk of your patients can't even get off after 6 or 8 weeks? God knows, after a month, several months or years. So this, the FDA is it does more harm than good. I have very little doubt now that it does more to legitimize drugs than to monitor them. That's a good sentence I haven't spoken before. Folks, the FDA does more to legitimize drugs than to monitor them. That's the very sad truth. Is that too extreme, Kim?
No, not at all. Actually, I was just writing that down. I really like that. I mean, that's really, you know, you start looking at, it is, it's about legitimizing it. And then they start supporting it. But, you know, I keep going back. I just heard you say 6 to 8 weeks, right? Why do we have people that are on these for years and they can't get off?
Yeah.
Some people want to get off and their bodies are addicted to it, which we know, like you just said, if it's in their tiny print, in the label, in the drug labeling, you know that it's that much greater. I mean, you wonder if the truth is even, if it's more, because if it made it into the label. But if you're saying 6 to 8 weeks, these weren't meant to be all these years later.
You know, when I first started in this, I was very naive, even though I was, you know, well-educated psychiatrist. When I started looking into Prozac and I read their marketing materials, which said the drug had been tested on 10,000 people and for months, I thought, wow, that's impressive. I actually did a hand count that has never been disputed in any lawsuit of how many people finished the trials for Prozac, and it's well under 400. Hmm. And that's what made the blockbuster drug. And furthermore, wow, those 400 were not even in the studies that got approval, which were even smaller than that, which were two studies in which the patients were also, many of them, taking benzodiazepines illegally and sedatives illegally because they were dropping out like flies because of overactivation, like insomnia and anxiety and agitation. So they had to give them sedatives to keep them in the trials. They did it illegally. Nonetheless, the FDA approved the drug on the basis of the two illegal studies because the other studies didn't make it. I mean, this is how bad and warped it is. And they couldn't even finish it 6 weeks. They had to finish it 4 weeks because so many were still dropping out when they were being drugged. Really a dreadful state of affairs, what goes on, folks. I'm going to say that wonderful sentence again. The FDA does more to legitimize drugs than to monitor them. So what's the solution? I don't have a good solution. Do we just want to get rid of the FDA entirely and allow people a real opportunity to sue, open up the capacity to sue these companies for lying, cheating, and stealing instead of so-called tort reform? You know, I do a lot of legal work, and I can tell you it is hard to bring a lawsuit. It is not easy. I can tell you that I have to discourage most of the people who call me and say, you know, do you think I have a lawsuit? Because if you're not dead or wretchedly disfigured, you are never going to get a lawsuit through. So, I don't know.
I know.
What's your thinking on solutions to this? We have about 3.5 minutes to go here.
Well, I mean, I would like to, you know, I've met quite a few people at the FDA that actually they want to do the right thing, and they are trying to do the thing. And I think there's some, it's, you know, the senior management. I would hate to get rid of them because right now we can't get rid of them when you also have all the bills and that are the measures happening to take away people's rights to sue. So to your point, you know, either you have to open it up and let people be able to hold a company accountable and be able to get in, but all mechanisms are in, all like the gloves are off to take that out. But I really think we need to start focusing, especially even on, and I'm, you know, the passionate about the psych drugs and the mental health drugs, and look at skills. I think there was something not too long ago that just came out on managing addiction through some of acupuncture. And of course, who's out there lobbying against them? It's the industry. And, you know, I mean, are there other ways? Can we get people to start, you know, obviously there's going to always be the business side of things, and there's, you know, those forces out there. But what can we do? You know, should we be getting rid of small things? Should we be getting rid of the PHQ-9 form at the physician's office that pretty much drives people to take drugs? Do we start having conversations? Do we get rid of, I mean, I feel like
by the way, folks,
some life skills.
The PHQ form is a little form that's in the doctor's office where he asks about, I can't remember, about 10 questions. And then he, if it's a depression form, he gives you an antidepressant. If it's an anxiety form, he gives you an anxiety drug, anti-anxiety drug. And down in the little corner is always the drug company imprimatur. These are created by drug companies. They're marketing tools that are being used with absolutely no science behind them to get primary care docs to prescribe. It's that crazy.
It is.
Using a drug company handout to check off whether or not to give a drug to your patient. Oh, my God. It's just bizarre.
That might be something where you're just asking for a solution, get people to start at when they do get them. Like, they're pretty much now being accepted and used at all of the – because everybody's concerned about mental health, and I'm putting that in quotes – that they're using that as a form at the primary care and your gynecologist and everywhere. Is that maybe getting people to say, I'm not filling it out? because I won't fill it out. I refuse to fill it out. So that might be one thing. Maybe just the idea of let's have some informed consent, real informed consent. But that means we have to educate the physicians, and it's not people like, you know, it's not the outsiders. I mean, these are real based on their science that are behind all of what's happening with not being, if the drugs work or don't work. You know, let's have real conversations. Let's have informed consent. You know, I think that would be another small step that could have some real benefits.
Well, I think anything like that, anything is going to help. Kim, we're coming to a close. Kim Witczak, Witczak, just a terrific person. You'll be hearing her on this show whenever she has something she wants to say. Thank you for being on the show. And next week, folks, I'm going to be just, you know, doing things a little more actively to let people know what I'm doing. I never tell you what's coming up next week. Next week, it will be Pam Popper, the great nutritionist, I think the most honest scientific nutritionist certainly I've ever met. I feel like she's the equivalent of people like me and Peter Goetze and Bob Whitaker in the nutrition field, scientists really examining the issue. That's Pam Popper. Do you want to learn about sound nutrition? We're going to be talking about it next week, and we're going to be talking about some amazing things that Pam and I are doing together. It's boggling my mind. Thank you, Kim Witczak, for being on the show. Bless you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I absolutely love talking with you. I'm a huge fan. We need to all come together, and I know slowly we're gonna, the truth will win out. The truth will win out.
We're gonna do our best to make it happen. Thank you, folks. Thanks to the most wonderful audience in the world. Thank you so much for listening to the Dr. Peter Bregenauer.